Hampshire Public Radio News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This week, The Exchange has looked at our nation's long emotional debate over immigration and the economy. We've heard the argument that the United States should close its doors to more newcomers, that we've outgrown our need for mass immigration, and that continuing our current path will damage our economy. We've also heard the exact opposite view, that opening our gates to more immigrants will spark a new era of innovation, entrepreneurship, and prosperity. This hour, though, we turn our focus away from the national stage to look at the role immigrants play in our own economy here in the Granite State. But first, an update on the tragedy in the seacoast town of Greenland, where the chief of police was shot and killed and four other officers were injured. NHPR's Josh Rogers has been tracking this story. And Josh, thanks a lot for being here.
No problem, Laura.
So what sparked this, Josh?
Well, it appears the police in what appears to be a drug task force effort were serving a warrant at 517 Post Road in Greenland at around 6 last night. When they arrived at the house, the suspect opened fire. You know, he shot five policemen and killing Greenland Chief Michael Maloney. The four other officers were injured, two not so seriously. They've been released from the hospital, two fairly seriously. They're still in Portsmouth Hospital. The suspect is believed to be 27-year-old man named Cullen Moutrie. There's also an unidentified woman with him. They're both dead. According to Attorney General Delaney, their deaths were confirmed by a police robot at around 2 a.m. It's sort of unclear if it was sort of murder-suicide. They're trying to sort that out. There are going to be autopsies performed today.
Wow, what a story. Well, and it was a long night, Josh, right? I mean, there's a big standoff and dozens of police cars and so forth.
Yes, and, you know, the barricades blocking non-resident traffic from the area are still up. There's no school in Greenland today. I spoke with someone on the scene a little while ago, and they said a large police helicopter continues to hover. The attorney general says investigators will be performing those autopsies on Mr. Moutrie and the unidentified woman with him. You know, Mr. Moutrie was well known to authorities in the area, had been arrested several times since 2007 on assault, disorderly conduct charges, right, as well as he was known to possess guns. And he was also charged in 2011 with possession of anabolic steroids. You know, accounts of him describe him as large and very muscular. So we'll obviously be learning a lot more about him as this moves on.
Well, and there'll be questions about, you know, if someone had that bad a criminal record, what were they doing not in jail? So there'll be more questions around that, I'm sure. Anything else, Josh, that we need to know at this point about this issue in Greenland?
Well, I mean, people there are understandably shocked, and you know, the death of a policeman is always tough. A lot of people say that this is particularly tough since Chief Maloney was only a week away from retirement, and so you know, we'll surely be learning more from authorities on the health of the other two officers. And, you know, as we move forward, we're certainly going to be – there's probably going to be a lot of attention paid to the execution of this warrant and, you know, how – so we can learn precisely what happened.
Okay. Josh, thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Laura.
That's NHPR's Josh Rogers. Again, he's been following the shooting of police officers in Greenland, New Hampshire, including the death of the chief of police there. More than a century ago, immigrants helped make New Hampshire an economic and industrial powerhouse with their large presence in our textile and paper mills. Today, the foreign-born make up about 8% of our state's workforce, but they're heavily represented in certain fields: computer programmers, software engineers, professors, and on the other end of the economic spectrum, maids, housekeepers, and dishwashers. Today in The Exchange, we wrap up 3 days on immigration and the economy, digging into how this issue has developed in New Hampshire in terms of jobs and other economic measures like taxes, public services, consumer spending. And let's hear from you this hour. What role do you see immigration playing in the Granite State's economy, in our past and in our present? How relevant to New Hampshire do you think the national debate over immigration is? Do we see the same tensions over economic issues or not? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477. NHPR. You can post your comments on our Facebook page, or you can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests are Eva Castillo, coordinator for the New Hampshire Alliance of Immigrants and Refugees, a part of the Massachusetts Immigrant and Refugee Advocacy Coalition. And Eva, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Robert Macheski, associate professor of history at UNH Manchester, specializing in industrial, urban, and immigration history. And Robert, welcome back. It's been a while. Good to see you, too.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Well, and Robert, just remind us, because I think sometimes we forget the huge role immigrants played in New Hampshire's economic past.
Well, I think it's inconceivable to think about immigration, to think about industrialization without connecting it with immigration and urbanization. Immigrants have been a vital part from the very beginnings, whether it was the Scotch-Irish starting the textile industry with their linen production, or whether it was the Catholic Irish who came in the 1840s. Each group that came in contributed significantly to the industrial development of the state. And in a variety of industries, it's hard to conceive of them without Swedes in the granite industry or Greeks in the shoe industry, because their presence here was very much connected to that industrial growth.
You know, just a little bit more on that, if you could, Robert, because so often we say the textile mills, those big buildings on the Merrimack in Manchester. But I'm interested in what you say about the other fields that immigrants were well known for their work.
Well, there are many fields. One that particularly comes to mind are dye workers who were generally Scottish. They were recruited specifically for their skills by the Amersfoort and Amersfoort Manufacturing Company and put to work in same thing with gingham workers. Female weavers were brought in, recruited specifically so that they could introduce the workers at Amersfoort to gingham production. So there's quite a bit of presence of immigrants in almost all the industries. Granite industries, Swedes were very big. Certainly, if you talk about the lumber industry, you have to talk about French Canadians, as you do in the textile industry.
So there's a lot there.
Yes, there is.
A lot there. And Eva, I just wonder, before we get into the present, how much do you think this incredible past, I mean, at one point New Hampshire had one of the highest levels of foreign-born workers in the country. How does this past inform our present here in New Hampshire? What do you think?
Well, we're still coming here to New Hampshire. You know, in fact, one of every 20 granny staters is an immigrant, foreign-born. You know, so it hasn't changed much.
Even though we think, well, New Hampshire isn't a really heavy immigrant state. When you start digging into it, there's a lot there, isn't there?
Of course, yeah. And the thing is that now it's not European people that come. We come from Africa and from Latin America. So different colors, we are spicing up the salad a little bit more.
And I want to ask you, Eva, and you too, Robert, about some of the different occupations that foreign-born workers work in today. But before we do, you know, I was talking to a colleague last night whose husband is an immigrant, and she said, and I want to hear what both of you think, she said, this whole immigration debate is so frustrating for me to hear. It's so much colored by what to do with illegal immigrants. And my husband, she said, is not in that club. He's perfectly legal. He's got his own business. He's not asking anyone for a handout. What do you think about that, Eva, that our conversations about immigration, our thoughts about it, certainly our policy debates about it, are so driven by this illegal slice?
Well, that's thanks to the media, really. You know, they're the ones that have poisoned the word immigration and equalized it with undocumented immigrants. But in fact, 54% of the immigrants in New Hampshire were naturalized citizens in 2010. So we have to stop thinking about undocumented and this fixation that we have with the undocumented. Yes, we do have a problem with that, but a lot of the people that are here, most of the people that are here are not undocumented. We do not have that problem in New Hampshire. And we have professionals, we have people that are coming here to integrate into the society and to become U.S. citizens, as you can see by the figures.
So the image is, you know, the undocumented Mexican worker working as a dishwasher. But according to the numbers I have from Brian Gottlob of Polycon Research, 63% of medical scientists in New Hampshire are foreign-born. 28% of computer programmers are foreign-born. 23% of software engineers, foreign-born. 25% of professors, foreign-born. 23% of economists. And then on the lower end of the scale, maids and housekeepers, 38% foreign-born. And dishwashers, 54% foreign-born. So, Robert, it's a much more varied picture than we think.
It certainly is. And as a matter of fact, I read somewhere that the immigration raises our educational level. If you go by four-year college participation, that the number of immigrants coming in here raises the educational level for the state as a whole. So I think it's really we're fixating on groups that don't really exist.
Yeah. So what about my friend's comment that she's so tired of hearing this debate framed in that way? Do you agree with her?
I think that's absolutely right. And I think it has to do with opposition to immigration and the media and the way it frames. I think Eva is absolutely right about that.
All right. Well, our phone number here in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, we're wrapping up our three-day look at immigration and the economy with a specific focus on New Hampshire. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And let's take a call. This is Paulina from Concord. Hi, Paulina. Go ahead.
Hello. I wanted to bring up a point supporting just the statement that we just made, that that foreigners probably bring up the educational level. I am a family medicine physician. I work in Manchester, and I'm originally from Ukraine. And I also don't think that I'm taking a job from any American, because most Americans probably want to go into higher-paid specialties, or, frankly, don't want to put an effort to become a doctor.
So, Paulina, do you think that you do hear that you're, quote, taking a job from someone else? Is that a feeling that you have?
No, but I hear that all the time about other people. I personally think that family medicine is a specialty that needs more people, and whether it's Americans or foreign-born, I don't think that I'm taking a job, and I don't hear that from anybody.
Okay. Paulina, thanks a lot for calling. You know, Robert, that immigrants are taking jobs from native-borns. We've heard that time and time again, haven't we?
Well, that's been
going
on since the beginning of immigration, really. In the 1840s, you had the Irish fighting the native-born over the taking of jobs. In the turn of the century, you had Greeks who were constantly in battle in Manchester with the Irish over fears that they were taking their jobs and diminishing and deteriorating their neighborhood. So this is a very common age-old kind of complaint, and there's very little evidence to support it.
Well, let's take some more calls after a short break. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Also coming up, we'll look at a group that helps refugees find work here in New Hampshire. And we'll take more of your calls. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. You can email us at exchange@nhpr.org or post your comments on our Facebook page. And we'll be right back.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Antioch University New England in Keene, providing graduate and certificate programs to make a difference in today's changing world. Information at antiochne.edu. And from Novus Engineering, an employee-owned company with a 23-year legacy of collaboration, responsiveness, and community involvement. Information at novusengineering.com. More on immigration and the economy from a New Hampshire perspective on The Exchange on NHPR and at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. It's the Friday News Roundup. New Hampshire weather for today, mostly sunny, high temperatures from upper 50s in the north country, around 60 in central areas of the state, low to mid-60s in southern parts of the state, a bit cooler along the seacoast. Tonight, mostly clear, lows from 25 from the White Mountains north, ranging to mid-30s for the rest of the state. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we continue our look at immigration and the economy with a focus on New Hampshire. One of the major sectors where immigrants and refugees often find their first jobs is in agriculture. Exchange executive producer Keith Shields learned more in a visit to one such business in Loudoun, New Hampshire.
DS Coal Growers in Loudoun, New Hampshire bills itself as a wholesale greenhouse facility. That means they grow a lot of the potted plants that are then shipped to garden centers and landscapers across New England. Looking across the facility, you see greenhouses filled up with row upon rows of annuals, while flower baskets hang in long lines above your head. For many of those who are employed here, the work isn't that glamorous. It's a lot of planting and cutting and watering and potting and then replanting. But the job needs to get done, and that's where the refugee comes in. For the last decade, Diaz Cole has been employing refugees to do a lot of the, if you pardon the double entendre, dirty work. Chris Slagle is head grower for Diaz Cole.
We started hiring the immigrants primarily because they are very aggressive about looking for work. We haven't put an ad in the paper for the last 3 years for seasonal work. folks that we've had the longest are from the Bosnia, Croatia, Serbia area. And more recently, we've had quite a few folks come from Bhutan and Nepal.
The company begins hiring new staff in January, and many work through the spring. At its busiest time, there may be up to 75 people working at the greenhouse. The work can be tedious and tough, but for many of these refugees, their first job at Kohl's is their first in America, and the first step to finally living the American dream. Shipping supervisor Lori Whiteway.
They want to work. Most immigrants come from a place they've had no work. They come from very poor situations. So when they come here, they're so incredibly grateful, and they love to work. They love to be productive. And most will grasp the opportunities and learn everything they possibly can. They would work 7 days a week if we let them, which we don't. It's just that they enjoy working because they've never had opportunities to be able to do it before.
But these jobs don't only help the refugees, they help the employer as well. According to owner Doug Cole, refugees fill a gap that many in agriculture find hard to fill.
Let's be honest, a lot of the people that are looking for jobs in the U.S., they're not thrilled with agriculture quite often. It's not always deemed a great profession. We pay the same rate regardless of whether it's a refugee, immigrant, New Hampshire citizen that was born here, etc. I will say, though, that many of the people that are looking for jobs may not be willing to work for an agricultural rate. So we're not taking advantage in any way of the immigrants, but the pool of people is a little thin that is really willing to work for an agricultural rate.
But refugees have been willing, and so overall, it's been a good fit. But there are challenges as well. Many refugees don't have a good grasp on the language, and so communication can be a problem. Managers at DS Cole have tried to circumvent that by elevating those that can understand the language better to translate and mediate between the English-speaking staff and the refugees. Hasta Bhandari is one of them. For 21 of his 22 years, Hasta lived in a refugee camp in Nepal. Then, 6 months ago, he came to New Hampshire. In February, he was hired for his first job in America at DS Cole's and still remembers that day.
When they hired, she called me and my mother received the call and she was not understanding English, so she understand my name. So she said that here is a call for you, and there was Chris speaking with me and I was so happy to get that job.
Bahasta also knows that his first job is only seasonal, available only most likely until the summer. And with rent, a wife, and two younger siblings he needs to support, Hasta worries about what that might mean for him when the work runs out.
When it ends, we don't know what we are going to do. That makes us worry about the future, because if we don't have work, or if the work ends or do not go well, then it's sure that we'll be in the street. So it's very, very hard.
But right now you have work and you're doing well.
Yeah, I think so. But I do have to think about my future because I have a lot of people behind me, so I have to support them.
But employees at DS Cole are trying to work around that. They're attempting to team up with those garden centers and nurseries that buy their products to job share, so that by April or May, many of these workers can be employed by them until business picks up once again for the greenhouse. For Doug Cole, it's important for them to help out these refugees, since, as he says, the refugee has also helped him.
Looking back in hindsight, if either or both the Yugoslavian group did not come over and the Bhutanese group did not come over, we probably would be in trouble labor-wise here. It would be tough. Everybody thinks of picking strawberries, grapes, etc. in California, which is huge. Without this workforce, we Americans would be in big trouble. We just don't have the people that are willing to do this work.
And it's not just the work. For many at DS Cole, the refugees who have come there have added a lot more than just filled pots and a narrow bottom line, but a spirit as well. Once again, Chris Schlegel.
I guess the other thing that the immigrants have brought to DS Cole is just their joy of life. It's incredible for what some of those folks have been through. I mean, some of them have been in refugee camps for years and years, and they are the happiest people that I think I've ever met. It really puts in perspective some of the problems that we have.
For New Hampshire's Immigration Story and The Exchange, I'm Keith Shields.
And again, we're looking at immigration and the New Hampshire economy today on The Exchange, and taking your calls, questions, comments at 1-800-892-6477. And Eva, real quick to you, lots of points in that piece that we heard from Keith. We talked earlier about the split in New Hampshire's foreign-born workers. Many, many highly skilled, highly educated professionals. But at the other end of the spectrum, what kind of jobs are there for people who come to this country with very little money, very little English?
Well, they're mostly service-oriented, so we have a ton of people working in laundromats, in hotels, in restaurants, just cleaning in houses and stuff like that. They're very hard jobs, but they do it with passion and with love. And in fact, there are certain industries that depend on that manual labor of the immigrants, like we just heard in the piece. And they say, if it were not for them, I could not function. You know, I've had people from big companies telling me without the manual labor of the immigrants, I could not function. The Americans come here and they leave in the first break and they quit.
Really?
Yes.
Because they don't want to do it.
They don't want to do it. It's too heavy and they're not used to that.
Do you have business people, Eva, seeking you out sometimes to serve as a liaison to help them find these workers?
On and off, yes. I have some connections with people, but right now I'm not service-oriented, so I really try not to do that.
All right. Well, and I want to bring another voice into our conversation. Again, on this issue of jobs, joining us now is Tanya Dumont, Matching Grant Coordinator for Lutheran Social Services, and she helps refugees find their first jobs. And Tanya, thanks for taking the time for us this morning.
Good morning. No problem.
Well, we just heard that piece from our executive producer, Keith Shields, about the jobs that refugees find, many of them seasonal work. So what happens, Tanya, when you help somebody find a three-month job, and then that job is up? Do you step back in, or are they kind of on their own at that point?
Yeah, no, we absolutely do. Reality is a lot of their first jobs are temporary, but we're very thankful for those jobs because it gives them something to put on their resume that is experience in country. It can be a little intimidating for some employers to hire someone straight from another country. So for these entry-level positions, it really serves as an important first stepping stone for them. But then we do help them with their second, and sometimes third job if needed. Other areas that we've been working in is retail, manufacturing and healthcare, hospitality, as what was mentioned earlier. And most recently, we have a small group of gentlemen entering in to receive their commercial driver's license. So we have some truck drivers out on the roads now. So they are expanding into other areas as well, into more permanent, secure jobs.
And as we heard in that piece about DS Cole, it was very positive, and the owners there have been very happy and enjoy employing these folks. When doesn't it work out, Tanya? What makes that match between worker and employer not work out?
Honestly, we've had very few cases of it not working out. Our clients as a whole, they want to be independent. They want to work. They want to pay their bills. They want to help their family members pay their bills. So there could be challenges that we do face along the way. And if we hear from a client or from an employer that, there's a miscommunication or maybe there's a cultural difference or problem, we actually just go to the company and sit down with the employer, with the client. And more often than not, any problems that arise are able to be worked out.
How often is lack of language skills and lack of transportation an issue, Tanya?
Transportation is definitely a major challenge.
Not a lot of public transportation in New Hampshire. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it just isn't really there. So how we tackle that is we help our clients obtain driver's license. It doesn't really take them very long to get their first car, and then at that point, we set up carpools. So if we have a company that's willing to hire 3 to 5 people, we can have one driver, one car, and everybody jumps in and they help take care of each other that way.
Final thoughts from you, Tanya, on this idea that New Hampshire's economy has changed. We're more high tech. We're more high skill. Where do refugees fit in that economy?
There are lots of places for them to fit in. We have very good working relationships with people in the healthcare fields, in retail. We have big box stores that, love employing our people. We really have not come across that. Of course, we do have clients that come with higher skill sets and lower skill sets, and we assess our clients to see where the best fit would be, and sometimes it's not an entry-level position for their first job, and we're able to shoot higher. But it really has been working quite well for them.
What would you say, Tanya, to an employer who thought, you know, I might want to get involved in that, but I'm a little nervous. I'm nervous about the lack of experience. I'm nervous about the lack of English. What would you say to a prospective employer that, yeah, you should do this?
Sure. Yeah, please call me. you know, the number here is 603-224-8111, extension 2254. And, you know, my name's Tanya Duma. I would love to come and meet with you and talk with you and, you know, give you the opportunity to meet some of our clients, and they can make that decision to see if, it, you know, it's a fit for their business as well.
Tanya, thanks a lot for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you so much.
Tanya Dumont, Matching Grant Coordinator for Lutheran Social Services. Again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Our guests in studio are Robert Macheski, Associate Professor of History at UNH Manchester, and Eva Castillo, Coordinator for the New Hampshire Alliance of Immigrants and Refugees. And let's go to the phones now. And first up is Bob waiting in Manchester. Hi, Bob, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, this is Bob Baines, the former mayor of Manchester, New Hampshire, and I'm very fascinated by your discussion this morning. And I just wanted the listeners to know the experience that I had with refugees and immigrants in Manchester. I would go to businesses on a weekly basis, and I was told consistently without immigrants and refugees, their businesses would not be able to stay in Manchester. They would not be able to grow in Manchester. It was a reliable workforce and something that was contributing to the overall economic vitality of the community. So it's a very positive message out there with the business community on the importance of immigrants and refugees in our city.
Well, and Mayor Baines, former Mayor Baines, thank you for calling in. Can I ask you a couple quick questions?
Sure.
I've got several emails here. I won't read all of them, but the point of them is that people do fear that immigrants may take away their jobs or depress wages. And let me just share one with you, if I could, from Nicole in Nashua. She says, my husband has worked with a great many immigrants, legal and undocumented. His pay went down when his former employer started hiring undocumented immigrants because they would work for less money. My husband was forced to take a pay cut, or his former employer would simply hire more undocumented workers and let him go, which he eventually did. These individuals were living together, cramped in an apartment to save money, and were sending a great deal of the money back to their home country. My husband and I would love to buy a home, new car, etc., but we could not afford it. These gentlemen were not buying these things. She says, I'm not opposed to legal immigration, but undocumented workers who will work for next to nothing have severely impacted my family. Letting my husband go was the best thing his former employer ever did for him. I've got another email or two on the same line, Mayor Baines. The fear that immigrants, especially perhaps undocumented, are taking away jobs and depressing wages for native-born.
Well, again, that would be something I have not had a lot of experience with. That has never was something that I heard of during the 6 years I served as mayor. I'm still involved with the immigrant community and refugee community. I do raise money to help refugees when they come to the city. I set up a fund in my sister's memory to help them. That's just not an experience I've had. And I go out to some businesses like Osram Sylvania in Manchester. I can name Freed's Bakery. I could name General Cable. I was recently at Associated Grocers, and the leadership there was telling me about the strength of the workforce, the good-paying jobs, the work ethic of the people that come there, the fact that they're on time, they're there every day. My story is a message of strength of that community and what they've meant to the economic vitality of the community. So the undocumented issue is not an issue that I have been, I've really heard of as a complaint during the time that I've been working with that community here in Manchester.
All right. Well, Mayor Baines, again, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Our number again here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. Josh is calling in from Berlin. Hi, Josh. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello to your guest. I'd like to just make the point that my grandparents came over from Italy at the turn of the century, 1900, but there were very stringent safeguards that made it so that they had to be sponsored by someone. They had to agree that they would not go on public assistance. And at the time, we had a massive expansion in our industries and our factories. Now we have an ever-increasing, seemingly influx of immigrants and an ever-increasing exodus of what jobs remain. And I would just like to say one last thing, and that is I know there's programs that will go to the Philippines to import people from the Philippines to go to school for free for nursing training for here, when our own poor children have to struggle with, you know, ever-mounting debts of student loans. And I don't think it's fair, and I feel that we have a responsibility for charity to begin at home, and we're a very giving country, and I like the immigrant people I meet, but I also know the realities are a shrinking economy does not make for an expansion of jobs.
Okay. Josh, thanks a lot for calling in. Couple of thoughts there. To you first, Eva, I think, and then I have another question.
Well, the first thing that came to mind is those restrictions on immigration are still in place. People that come here have to be sponsored by somebody, and they're not entitled to get any benefits.
That's the big question. You know, how much are immigrants entitled to, you know, food stamps, TANF, or welfare, as most people would call it? Are they eligible or not, Eva?
Well, you have to make a difference. If you're talking about immigrants that come here under different visa category other than refugees, they're not entitled to any type of benefits for the first 5 years, mm-hmm. and they have to be sponsored by somebody. The refugees come under a different visa category, so that's a federal program, and there's monies in place for them. So
that's worth mentioning, and the distinction is sometimes lost, right, Eva, that immigrants who come here are under a very different set of rules than refugees. Refugees are under an official program from the State Department and so forth.
That's right, and they have an agency sponsoring them and taking care of their basic needs when they arrive.
You know, it's interesting to hear Josh talk about his grandparents. And Josh, thanks a lot for calling in. When they came here, they were sponsored, and he said they didn't access public services. I don't know if those public services were even available back in the day.
That's a more recent development. The public services that were available was your ward boss, your family, your kinship, you know, the local mutual benefit society you might belong to. But you had to take care of those needs in other ways. And generally, it was through clustering with your own kind and building the institutions that you need, whether they were banks or debt societies or
hospitals,
et cetera.
So the sort of 1960s programs that started, you know, food stamps and so forth, those weren't available when Josh's grandparents were around.
That's correct.
All right. We will take more of your calls after a short break. 1-800-892-6477. More on immigration and New Hampshire's economy after a short break.
Science has been described as the analysis of the obvious, the desire to know causes and literature of truth. Hi, I'm Ira Flatow, and every week on Science Friday, we test those descriptions. I'll be in New Hampshire, sitting down with NHPR's Brady Carlson to knock around a few of those ideas, and we'll be fielding questions from the audience. We'll be at UNH Durham on May 1st, so visit nhpr.org for tickets and information.
This event is sponsored in part by Nathan Wexler and Company.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Bruss Construction, transforming New Hampshire's existing buildings into energy-efficient, occupant-friendly environments. Information at BrussConstruction.com. And from Holloway Motor Cars of Manchester, authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer, featuring the 2012 E-Class, combining a signature blend of performance, luxury, and technology. BenzCars.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we complete our look at immigration and the economy with a focus on the Granite State, both the history and some of the current issues. Let's hear from you, too. What role do you see foreign-born workers playing in our economy? How do you think that role has changed over the years? And as we look at this national debate over immigration, how relevant is that debate to New Hampshire? Do we see some of the same issues and tensions over economic issues coming up? Or not. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-NHPR. We go now to Ali Faraz, co-owner of the Spice Center in Manchester. He also owns a cell phone business. He's originally from Pakistan. He's been living in New Hampshire for 10 years. And Ali Faraz, great to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Well, how did you first come to America? You were a college student, as I understand, right?
Yes, I was a college student, and I came to California. So then I came to New Hampshire right after, like, 3-4 months. So I finished my master's degree from here, and then I started my own business.
And how hard was it for you, Ali, to stay after you finished college? You know, were there lots of requirements and paperwork and so forth that you had to manage?
Absolutely. Yeah, there are tons of requirements. Like if you are on different kind of visa, it's not very easy to switch your status so you can work like legally in this country. So there are some processes you have to go through. So, you know, you just follow those processes, and there's like attorneys to help you. And so, yeah, just take real time, real effort, but everything is possible.
You know, it's interesting to me that you came from California to New Hampshire and stayed here. This is not an especially diverse state. I'm wondering why you decided to stay here.
Yeah, actually, the program I was interested in to do my master's, that was only was available in like Massachusetts. So when I came here, I find New Hampshire like more beautiful place to live and stay. And so I got married too, you know, it was a nice state to raise your kids. So I decided to stay in New Hampshire.
So the same reason many people come here.
You
know, it's beautiful and it's a good place to raise kids. How connected are you, Ali, to the immigrant community here as fellow business owners and fellow workers?
Yeah. We have the business I have is an ethnic supermarket. So most of my customers are immigrants. So I'm very well connected, not only like personally, but when they come to my market, they feel like they're back home. So I'm providing them, you know, the experience of their back home country and providing the food, taste, and everything, you know. So that'll keep them connected.
Have you hired other immigrants to work at your stores, your cell phone store and your spice center?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I have all my employees are immigrants, and I'm very open to, you know, I always, you know, in the hiring process, as I have another business for the cell phone. So we are always hiring. I prefer, you know, if somebody needs a job, some immigrant, some refugee, you know, so we are very open.
Well, Ali, last question for you. What sorts of challenges did you face when you were trying to set up a business? Again, given that you weren't a native, and are there any advantages to being an immigrant business owner?
Yeah, sure. The first challenge, like if you are in this country, it's the language. And then the culture, you know, like you come from different culture, you speak different language. So it's a little difficult in the beginning, so unless you start understanding the culture and the language. But also, like if you come from other country, you have a different rules and regulations in that country. But when you come here, it's completely different. So just the few years, in the initial years, you're just trying to understand what you have to do, what you don't have to do. There's nothing like written, you know, rules and regulations to run business.
Mm-hmm.
But you will learn, you know, as you grow.
Yeah, I think a lot of business owners would say there are a lot of rules and regulations that have to, immigrant or not. Well, Ali, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate
it. Thank you. Bye.
That's Ali Faraz, co-owner of the Spice Center in Manchester and also a cell phone business in Manchester. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And another Josh is on the line with us. This is Josh in Plymouth. Hi, Josh. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. How you doing? I just wanted to make a comment about the email you read about the lady's husband that lost his job to undocumented workers. And I think that, you know, they undocumented workers get a lot of blame for, you know, the construction jobs and taking jobs, but something should be said about, you know, the responsibility of the employer to go through the right channels, you know, and to hire legal workers that are help out, you know, with paying the right wages and stuff, you know, these construction companies. And I've done it for years. I mean, I've worked in construction for years, you know, they'll fill up with, you know, undocumented workers and pay them under the table cash and just really low wages. And, you know, they need to take some responsibility, too.
So you've seen that here in New Hampshire, Josh, working in construction, the hiring of
Yeah, New Hampshire. And, you know, I've worked across the country, but, yeah, it's in New Hampshire, too. These construction companies, you know, they have to take some of the blame too. They can't just, you can't just put it all on the illegal immigrants because, you know, they're just trying to survive and raise a family.
Well, Josh, thanks for calling in. And, you know, Eva, this is something we haven't quite looked at. A lot of people focus their ire on that illegal immigrant, but he's saying, look at the businesses too.
Well, it's true. And what he says about construction, I have tons of people that come to me because they work in construction companies and they get unpaid wages. They don't get paid. So part of my job is to try to recuperate those wages. And when I call the employers, they usually try to give me the runaround. And I say, well, but they're illegal. I say, yeah, but it is your responsibility to make sure that these people that you hire have the proper documentation to work. So the first one to break the law was you as an employer.
And you say that to them.
Oh,
what
yes.
do they say?
Oh, yes. So they know full well what they're doing, you know. But fortunately, there are mechanisms to recuperate the wages. But I agree with Josh. The responsibility is the employer. They are the ones that need to make sure that everything is in place before they hire anybody.
And, you know, Robert, going back in history, we talked about how mill owners would go down to Ellis Island and, you know, encourage people who'd just gotten off the boat to come up here and work. So they were all clearly documented. They'd just gone through the whole immigration process. But when did we start to see this whole concern about illegal immigrants and,
well, that's
and
a
the
much
workforce?
More recent one. Really, I would say 1970s and 1980s, it began to emerge, and largely as a result of changes in 1965 in the immigration laws. But I want to just say a point about the low wages, again, hiring illegal immigrants. The use of immigrants to lower costs for employers has been a traditional age-old mechanism, and so it's not the first time that they've hired one set of immigrants to play off another set of immigrants to lower their costs. And one that I'm specifically thinking about is at the Bracket Shoe Company in Nashua, which hired Greek workers to replace the Irish workers, you know, and lower their costs.
Everything old is new again, or everything yes. new is old again, we should say. Eva, did you want to jump in real quick there?
No, I agree with that. You know, it's, every new wave is pitted against the older wave, you know. So I guess it'll be our turn in a few years to go against somebody else. I mean, who knows?
Let's take another call. This is Chris in Concord. Hi, Chris. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to mention the fact that I think that's sort of been overlooked in that the money or subsidies that does go to immigrants of any kind is really being put right back into the economy, seeing as how these people are not making much money, and so they're spending all that they do get, whether it be on their rent or their children or whatever. And I'll take my question out the air, but that's just my comment.
So there's a balance there, Chris. You know, maybe there is some money put out in terms of K-12 education or emergency care, but you're saying there's also the consumer spending side by immigrants, including illegals. What do you think,
right,
Eva?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Chris. Thanks. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No. That was exactly what I wanted to say, and I just think that, you know, I mean, people talk about, you know, immigrants taking jobs or whatever, but I think that it's a huge side of it that's overlooked, that it's actually a really big subsidy because these people are paying for basic services, which, you know, people want to be hired in basic services and things like that, so... yeah, that was my comment.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot. And I think you have some numbers on that, Eva, right?
Yeah, here I have some numbers from the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy that says that unauthorized immigrants in New Hampshire paid $5.1 million in state local taxes in 2010. So we bring a lot to the economy, whether you have papers or you do not have papers.
And
you
even know? Even illegal immigrants
of
are
course.
Buying cereal at the grocery store.
And we pay rent, we patronize the stores, we spend money in the supermarkets, the haircuts, and everything.
Did you want to jump in there too, Bob? The economic impact of immigrants, and even in the past, you know,
well, every time you bring
wealth.
A group of immigrants like the French Canadians, you're also importing with them attorneys and shopkeepers and barbers and other. Support individuals that would enrich the economy again.
And even this focus on the drain in terms of services, and Eva, you said earlier that that's not as big as people think. That focus is relatively new. Again, in the old days, Bob, that wasn't
much of a
focus.
You didn't have to worry about that. Essentially, immigrants were forced to take care of themselves by forming their own kinds of organizations, whether they're unions or mutual benefit societies. But they had to take care of themselves because there wasn't that government role.
We still see a lot of that these days, don't we, Bob? I mean, we hear about Bhutanese getting together. And
every time you see a group of immigrants and there's a critical mass, you see organizations, you see the church spires begin to go up, you see the immigrant groups begin to organize themselves in a variety of different ways.
Eva, looking over time at this issue, and we've heard some great information from Bob about how things have changed. What have you seen just since you've been here in terms of how the community welcomes or doesn't welcome immigrants, in terms of the jobs available for people coming in?
Well, the community has definitely grown. But the thing that I have noticed the most is the diversity of the immigrants coming. When I first moved to New Hampshire, I was coming from Michigan, so I was used to diversity. When I moved here in 82, the first thing I asked my husband was, where are the black people here? And all of a sudden, you know, in a span of like 10 years or so, I see people from all colors, from different countries, not your traditional European immigrants. So the diversity is more noticeable now. So, but the economy is still there. We're still working. We're still growing up. We're still contributing to society. And we're not going to stop coming to New Hampshire. So I want this to be a more welcoming state and to realize that we're all people. When you connect from a human being point of view to another human being, all the difference melt apart. You know, we all have the same basic needs. We all have the same basic values. We just want to make a decent living here, and we came here to bring a lot to New Hampshire.
Is there one thing you wish, Bob, again, as we look at this issue of immigration in the New Hampshire economy, one thing that you would really like everyone to know, to understand, to appreciate about this issue?
That immigrants have always been central to the economy, and they will be central to the economy. They bring skills, they bring experience, they bring energy, they bring drive, and it's unthinkable, really, to have the kind of dynamism in the economy without immigrants.
Do you think people appreciate that in Manchester, where
no,
you are?
Not particularly.
Not even in Manchester with that storied past.
Certainly more so in the past. There were good immigrants and then there's bad immigrants. You know, and every generation sort of defines the next group as in negative kinds of ways. So at times there are negative perceptions in the Manchester community that I think are misplaced. And if we looked more traditionally at the role of immigrants in the economy, I think we'd see a different kind of story.
Yeah, it's what Eva talked about earlier, this sort of each group that comes in gets established and then starts piling on to the latest, newest group. We've seen that time and time again, haven't we?
It has been that way. The Irish are particularly notable in that they were so discriminated against. And then every group that came in after them had to fight the Irish in order to get their housing and their jobs. And, so it's not an unusual thing at all.
Wow. Well, Eva, and this weekend is a big weekend for this issue of immigration and the New Hampshire economy. There's a conference at St. Anselm College in Manchester. We had the keynote speaker on yesterday. And he talked about a new wave of entrepreneurialism that he feels like more open doors. If we open the doors more, we'll unleash a wave of entrepreneurialism and so forth. How does that fit into the conference that you're having at St. Anselm College this weekend?
Well, we're making the state aware that we're here to stay, that New Hampshire has been traditionally an immigrant state, and we continue to be an immigrant state. I'm going to be a participant in that conference. I'm going to be presenting the Welcoming New Hampshire Project, which is part of the national initiative Welcoming America, which is in place in 22 states right now. And the focus of this initiative is to promote mutual respect and understanding between the receiving and the immigrant community themselves. And it focuses on the receiving community to make it more aware and to make it more open to receiving these immigrants.
I think I heard about that about a year or two ago, that it was so much of the focus has been on the people coming in. This was a focus on the receiving community. Can you just give us a quick taste of that, Eva? Because that's real interesting.
Well, they say if you open up the minds and the hearts of the people that are in the established community, they use it, the metaphor of the soil. You're rendering the soil fertile for us immigrants, the seeds to grow and sprout here. When people relax their attitude and are willing to just sit next to somebody they don't know and talk to them and ask questions from a point of view of curiosity, we come to understand one another and to realize that there's a lot more that we have in common than makes us different from one another.
All right. Well, there is a link on our website to that conference again on Saturday. So if you want more information, you could go to nhpr.org. And Robert and Eva, it was really good to have you. Robert Macheski, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Robert Macheski, Associate Professor of History at UNH Manchester, specializing in industrial, urban, and immigration history. And Eva, thank you also.
Thank you, Laura.
Eva Castillo, coordinator for the New Hampshire Alliance of Immigrants and Refugees, a part of the Massachusetts Immigrant and Refugee Advocacy Coalition. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our series on New Hampshire's immigration story is made possible in part by the New Hampshire Humanities Council. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.